Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It is the 9th day of September, 14 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to the proceedings this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We always love it when you are here. And let us talk about, we're going to talk about all kinds of things today, all the issues in the news, and we welcome you to join in and have your say. Panel at WAMC.org. It's as simple as that. Write us an email and we'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is in his place. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am in my place. I have to tell you that our wonderful next-door neighbor is painting his house. And before you paint your house, you power wash it.
Oh, that's good.
And so there'll be a little bit of noise, if there may be a little bit of noise, in which case I'll ride the controls on this end and try to do my best to keep it minimal.
It'll
to
be
minimis.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah. He's a wonderful
guy. Bathroom's good way, places to go, Alan.
Yeah, right. I remember when you did it. And by the way, we had to power wash our house before we painted it, so I get it.
That's better than sanding, and scraping. That's less noise.
Yeah, you make a point.
And the painting won't make any noise at all, so that's good. We'll get this done, and then we'll be fine. We also welcome counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance to the program. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
I'm very glad to be here.
Always
an exciting show yesterday.
Yeah, it was. I'm sure you're all ready for today to make it equally exciting.
Yes, of course.
Bob Griffin joins us as well. He's Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Joe. Good morning, everybody. Glad to be here. Joe, I think Ray will be interested in this. Today is Wiener Schnitzel Day, National Wiener Schnitzel Day.
Wiener Schnitzel Day. That explains the odor in the newsroom. That's good. Okay. Thank you
maybe,
for letting us
maybe.
Know.
Yeah,
maybe. Who knows? that or we now know where Jimmy Hoffa is. Rosemary Armeo is investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. I've overslept. I've had no coffee. I'm not responsible for what happens today.
Great. Great. You know, the good old days when you came into the studio, sometimes you'd have a few belts beforehand. And now what are we going to do?
My next door neighbor is 96, and that's the secret of his longevity is a shot in the morning.
Yeah.
You go up with him and you get one too.
That's, so maybe you can head over there before during the break. Well, good morning, everyone. Again, we welcome you. It's so nice to have you with us. Let's get to the subject at hand, or subjects, I should say, and talk about what's making news today. One of the big stories, the president has been in his weirdly coy way of saying that we're gonna have a vaccine by a very special day, and I think you know what day I mean, and of course he means Election Day. But as all of that has gone out on the trail and said that there is going to be a vaccine by that time. A couple of things have happened. One is that a group of drug makers, the nine leading drug makers who are working on a potential coronavirus vaccine, all signed a pledge to thoroughly vet any coronavirus vaccine, saying they will not rush anything to the marketplace until it is ready. Then you have AstraZeneca, who has halted a vaccine trial to investigate a participant's illness. AstraZeneca halted global trials of its coronavirus vaccine on Tuesday because of a serious and unexpected adverse reaction in a participant. The trial's halt, which was first reported by StatNews, will allow the British-Swedish company to conduct a safety review. How long the hold will last is unclear. In a statement, the company described the halt as a routine action which has to happen whenever there is a potentially unexplained illness in one of the trials while it is investigated, ensuring we maintain the integrity of the trials. In large trials like the ones AstraZeneca is overseeing, the company said participants do sometimes become sick by chance, but such illnesses, quote, must be independently reviewed to check this carefully, which is what the scientists have been telling us for a long time. This is why you don't rush. This is why you don't rush anything to the market, and this is why you take your time, because it takes a long time to get this stuff right. So, not to say that AstraZeneca was rushing, but because these things, as they say, is a somewhat routine action. But, Alan, what do you make of the situation?
Well, I've been thinking about it a lot. Obviously, we talked about this yesterday, and I made the point, and I stick with the point. We have these protections in place for a reason. We have them there so that if something is going to go wrong, we know it and we can protect people. And that's why we do it. The FDA does it. That's why we have it with drugs. That's why we have it with vaccines. There is an absolute requirement that you stick with this. Now we get a president who wants to be elected again. And so he's saying, we're going to have this by, you know what day. We all know that day is election day, of course. It has the subtlety of a hammer. He's doing what he's doing. I mean, you know, it is clear that the drug makers themselves know that this could be a very tough situation. After all, there are such things as lawsuits and other things. And they want everybody to take the drug. And if the drug has a cloud of dangerousness around it, people aren't going to take it. A lot of people aren't going to take it anyway. So that's where it is right now. It's clear that the drug makers are behaving, at least on the surface, responsibly.
Yeah, who would have thought that we look to the pharmaceutical industry as being the stewards of good practices? Bob Griffin.
Yeah, I think Alan summed it up really well. And I actually need to tip my hat to the pharmaceutical companies to make sure that they're ensuring that we're following the best science possible. And this really does get to sort of the core of some of the issues that I have with the current administration and President Trump is that you can't rush this. And as much as all of us want to have a vaccine out there, it has to be done in a way that doesn't create bigger problems. In addition to that, we really do need to understand if this side effect that they're seeing, and realize it's one case, and they're going to do their due diligence to see if this was just coincidental or somehow related. But it's really important that we understand what the potential side effects are, because the doctors then are going to have to start to tailor who could potentially get a vaccine and who can't, understanding the risk, because you certainly don't want to give somebody a vaccine and increase risk rather than reduce it. The whole issue of politicization is enormously frustrating and really, really dangerous. And at the same time, you have the sort of anti-vaxxer movement right now anyway. So there's an awful lot that we can talk about in this area.
Malcolm.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, this is exactly how the zombie apocalypse starts, that, you know, some manufacturer rushes to a drug to cure cancer or something. I think that was I Am Legend. And, you know, there's a side effect that no one predicts, which is, you know, zombieism. So, okay, all joking aside, this is a very serious, serious matter that AstraZeneca pulled their trials. Because as I understand it, the individual developed a viral infection inside the spine or the nervous system, which should cause concern. Now, they don't know whether that was a pre-existing condition, which was going to happen anyway, or if it was a side effect from the drugs, you know, while testing the drug's efficacy. So that means that Donald Trump's entire sideshow Carnival Barker routine, where he has tried to push hydrochloroquine as a miracle cure. Then he tried to push blood therapies as miracle cures. And now he's trying to push for the November 3rd presidential election that that a drug will be available, a vaccine will be available. No one should take this seriously. I take the Oxford test very seriously, but Donald Trump himself pushing these things, this should be a reason not to vote for Donald Trump because of his impetuousness, his irresponsibility, and is willing to bet your life on his reelection.
And Rosemary Arameo.
Yeah, he has medicine under attack the same way he does science. And this is, we're praising the pharmaceuticals when all they're doing is simply following a well-established and a procedure that's safe. And Trump is trying to push them. And I think he's putting a lot of pressure on them. And there must be great temptation to do that because the company that comes up with the vaccine has a gold mine. And Trump will see to that. So this is to be taken seriously. It goes along with this push to the FTC. He's actually campaigning on this. He sees it as a reason to vote for him. But if you're seriously ill, he will get the FTC to release the law so that you can try it. If you're at the end, you can try it no matter what. Even if there are safety concerns, if you're a terminal patient, you should be trying these drugs just because they could give you a last shot. And he thinks that's a good thing, and many of his followers do. And that vaccine goes along with it. And in addition to the safety concerns, which we definitely ought to have, because look at what he's done with the FTC and the CDC. These were scientific medical groups, we thought, and they have shown themselves to be very susceptible to his pushing. So now he's doing it with the drug companies. Why would they not be susceptible? In addition to that, he's not working with WHO. So if we do get, say we do get, against all odds, a safe vaccine, who's going to get it? The WHO would like it to go to all the most vulnerable people first, healthcare workers throughout the world, doctors who work with these patients and who are doing this research ought to get it first. They won't. In the United States, who do you think is going to get it first under a Trump administration? He's not cooperating at all with WHO, not just by not funding them, but with not cooperating with their vaccine research. I think it's very fraught. And I hate to say, because I hate anti-vaxxers, I think they should be jailed. And I hate to sound like one of them at all, but I do have concerns about the safety of this one.
Bob?
I was just doing my Trump bingo card to see who was going to get it first, and Jared actually came up first on my card. You're right, Rosemary. And it's also ironic to me looking and watching the president's rallies. You know, if he really wanted to help people stay safe, he should just start with the simple step of wearing a mask. Instead, he's made it this bizarre point of pride that you're going to put yourself in danger, and worse, put your communities in danger because of his position. I will also note, and I know this is getting away from the pharmaceutical question, Joe, but you know, the Sturgis bike rally a couple weeks ago, they're now tracing directly back to that a number of outbreaks, which again shows
250,000 cases, Bob.
Yes, that is a big number, absolutely, and I think that's just the beginning.
And of course, I mean, not to make, because we do hear about these when these events happen, and I realize I've now fallen for your little trick there, Bob, of moving us off the topic here. But because yes, when the president spoke last night in North Carolina, and there's 1,000 people there. They're all packed in together. They are outside, but they're not wearing masks. The same thing with the at the Republican National Convention on the last day. Those are all potential super spreader events. How much of that are we going to hear of what the results are?
Exactly, Joe. And to bring it all the way back, I mean, we're treating the vaccine as if it's the only solution. And I guess what I was trying to argue is that it's not. That there are other things that all of us can do that, frankly, don't take much out of our out of our daily lives in order to do. Wash your hands, have good hygiene, wear a mask. Yet he's pushing the vaccine and making it sound like he is the deliverer of this gift from heaven. At the same time, he's responsible for continuing to support people who are spreading the disease. Excuse me, the virus. And that's where there's such hypocrisy in the position of this man in this administration.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have letters from listeners, and we will talk more about this very important subject and move on to other subjects as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. With us this morning, Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. I was interested in something that we were just talking about when it comes to the pressure put on drug makers. And Rosemary, you made a very good point. You know, this is, they're doing what they should be doing, right? I mean, these are the rules that have been put into place, and that's really all we're asking them to do, and now they have agreed to do that. But I guess it still doesn't mean that they will, you know, it would be difficult to see how they, if they bow to pressure, to know that they did, right?
How are we going to know? The people who should be protecting us are the ones who are applying the pressure to speed things up and get it done. These are the same folks who pushed opioids as wonderful drugs that would relieve us of pain, and look at the trouble we're in because of that. It's a very thin line between drugs that do great good and the harm that those drugs do, and these companies make money on selling drugs. That's the fact of life.
Bob, you were making that point as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I completely agree with what Rosemary was saying, and it's a sad statement of where we are as a society, that we actually need to congratulate people for following the rules and the laws, but that is exactly where we are right now.
As opposed to the president of the United States, who keeps changing the rules and the norms, and so that when we see somebody do what is respectable or expected of them, we say, "Oh, isn't that great?"
Right. And also the pressure that he's putting on the FDA as well as other agencies, but in this case, the FDA. Let's go.
And Joe, before we jump in, you know, one point that I want to make to all of our listeners, this isn't an anti-Trump issue in completely. It really is. I would love for a vaccine to be out there. I mean, I would love nothing more than to be able to return our communities to as close to a pre-COVID situation as we could. So I don't want everybody to think, well, they just hate Trump, that's why they're saying this. It's not that at all. I was laughing at Malcolm's comment because I think he was spot on. It's like every bad zombie movie starts with this scenario. And Rosemary, the way we find out if it's rushed is sadly that people die.
Yeah, right. He doesn't care about that. How many were up to 180,000? He never mentions them.
Right. And, you know, one thing that I think we should know about the largesse here of the drug companies, we know they're all looking out for our best interest. The only reason they're looking out for our interest is because screwing up this vaccine is a matter of earning a difference between a few billion dollars in developmental profit and literally trillions of dollars getting the vaccine right. So this is the drug makers understanding that if they mess this up once and the Russians get it out or the Chinese get it out or the Singaporeans get one out, literally trillions of dollars will go out the window. So no one's taking any chances here, and Donald Trump's mouth is not going to allow them to miss out on that level of money.
Speaking of which, didn't the Russians already get out a vaccine? What happened to that?
It wasn't pretty, well, right?
You'll never know.
No one knows. No one knows. They said that they had given it out to first responders, but no one knows anything about it. It was probably a placebo.
All right, let's go to some letters here as we work through what people think about all of this. 2 weeks ago, says Peter, the National Academy of Medicine appointed an ad hoc committee to report to the CDC, the NIH, and the FDA. The committee is made up of public health administrators from Harvard, Columbia, UPenn, University of Michigan, UVA, Stanford, and Berkeley, as well as science-based corporate people. The committee's charge is to create an order of distribution for a COVID-19 vaccine. Once a vaccine is found to be safe and effective, there is no rush, and President Trump cannot deep six this report. How do I know this? Our younger daughter is a member of this committee. Well, okay, but I don't. But I hope that's the case. But I think the concern is that the overriding of the FDA, the CDC, and the NIH that's continually happened with the administration, right? I mean, that's the worry.
And first, Joe, I mean, I'd like to congratulate the letter writer on obviously having a wonderful daughter, and thank you to them for their service. Just because they impanel the group, though, that doesn't mean that the administration needs to follow this guidance. And the point I think you're getting to is that we've seen the best scientific minds ignored by this administration. And we've even seen it more recently with the CDC, very sneakily changing its own direction because of political pressure. So if we're looking at this with a sort of a jaundiced eye and being very wary of this, the Trump team, then they deserve it.
Mm. We go to Jim, who says, morning all, remember that Trump supporters won't wear masks partially because, quote, liberals think we should. So don't you think they will reject the vaccine for the same reason? And then right out of the box, 30-40% of the public won't get vaccinated, even before you add in the other folks who refuse for other reasons.
That's interesting, because I think Trump is going to trumpet this as his here's what I've done to save you, and his minions will embrace it in a way they have not embraced masks, which, yes, oddly have become something to taunt liberals with. I even had, in doing my census enumerating, where I had one guy who wouldn't talk to me until I took off my mask. Ridiculous.
Did you?
Well, you know.
I did, and then I went into my car afterward and slathered myself in sanitizer.
Malcolm?
Yeah. You have to understand that there's going to be these three groups out there as this vaccine is developed. You know, we mentioned it a little earlier. You're going to have your pro-mask people who understand the seriousness of this, which will be about 65% of the country. Then you're going to have your diehard, there was never a real threat, this is no worse than pneumonia, Trumpers, which is about 35% of the country, who wouldn't wear a mask anyway, and a very large part of them will be anti-vaxxers. They will say, well, you know, this isn't that serious, especially if the government changes. If Joe Biden wins next year, I think 35% of this country, because of this mania that is in their head that everything that liberals do or everything progressives and Democrats do is evil and out to get them. You know, they'll shift back to the whole you can't trust the government thing. The problem is that if Trump wins, you're going to have the same thing. You won't be able to trust the government. And right now, because he has monkeyed with the CDC, he has monkeyed with biological research organizations and Health and Human Services, it's going to be very hard to trust him. And I think that this thing is going to go on a minimum of two or more years, because you have to remember the drug makers also have to create over a billion doses just for the United States. They have to manufacture that. And then, as we understand it, people have to get a regular dose and a booster dose. And then again, you have to make sure that you don't change into zombies.
So if I'm hearing you right, Malcolm, that your concern is that if before election, up until election day, and even if Trump wins, he's going to be saying, take this vaccine. But if Joe Biden wins and the vaccine comes later, he will then work his magic, however that works out, and we'll try to get people, we'll talk about how they're trying to kill us with the vaccine.
Actually, I think from election day to the day that the inauguration happens, depending on whoever wins, even if Trump loses, he will push people to get the vaccine, which no one's going to get, right? Fauci has said there's no way this thing is going to be ready for use before the end of the year. But Trump will then come out and say, if it turns out to be effective, he'll come out and say he stopped the virus. It was really him. He will take credit for anything. Then at 1 minute past 12 on January 20th, Trump will say, you cannot trust Joe Biden. They're out to kill you. This man is a paranoid, sociopath. And that's not me speaking. That's his niece, who is a psychologist. That is the people who wrote the book called In Duty to Warn.
His sister.
We can see it with our own eyes. The man's nuts. So there's a lot of uncertainty comes in here that depends on whether you believe a crazy man or not.
Well,
the only correction, Joe, is that, and Malcolm, you're right on everything except he will not take responsibility for 192,606 American deaths, a lot of which could have been avoided if we had stronger leadership from him and his administration. And that is the current number as of 2 minutes ago.
Right.
Right. He sees himself as a hero, though. He jumped onto the 2 million dead mark if he had done absolutely nothing and let the virus rage around the country. He has now incorporated that as his self, that he saved America. So it's going to get nuttier.
Let's take a break.
He's a Nobel Prize nominee. Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Take that in for a moment.
And in the meantime, 48-48 in Florida, an absolute dead heat. Can you believe that many people believe the stuff from this guy that you're talking about?
Florida.
And spending a ton of time there, obviously. Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll go on with our panel, and we have more letters as well. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Going back to the letters this morning, and again, we welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's see. Frank says, Malcolm isn't credible because there's no such thing as an ex-spy. Okay.
<I'm an> ex-Marine.
It's true.
I got some bad news for you, bro. When you walk out those doors and they take your clearance, all you can be in is associations and museums. Believe me, you're not in the loop, but you definitely know. The reason that I'm so good at insight is that I know the pathways to information and how they flow in a top secret world. So when I make these leaps, they're not uninformed leaps. They are leaps that I'm just not going to tell you the pathways about.
Amy writes to us and says, I'm not hearing much about drugs moving through the FDA system to alleviate COVID-19 symptoms. Some have been on the market for decades to fight other diseases. I see releasing these sorts of drugs as crucial to moving back to a new normal. There is no vaccine for the average cold, which is a coronavirus, but people don't usually die from a cold. Anyone on that?
I think the writer's spot on that. There has to be a whole series of different drugs to deal with all aspects of COVID. And I don't know what's in the pipeline right now. But she's right. This is something that we're going to have to pay attention to. Again, we're talking about millions and millions of Americans who have already contacted this virus. And frankly, I think there's some science pointing to the fact that they could get it again. So she's spot on. A lot of work, a lot more work to do. There isn't going to be just this amazing, incredible vaccine that shows up on election day and everything's going to be fine. It's just not the way it's going to go.
We have this letter from Justin, and it's a little long, but I'm going to allow it because it's a good one. Justin says, I'm a scientist, and I'm about as pro-vaccine as they come. I've spent a lot of time over the years trying to debunk a lot of things, the anti-vax talking points that get spewed online about vaccines, which have gone through rigorous safety testing. One of the people who has spread some of these lies is Donald Trump, who even in recent years has repeated the discredited claims that vaccines cause autism. Now that his mishandling of the pandemic is a threat to him politically, Trump wants to rush a vaccine through without the thorough testing that usually assures us the vaccines are safe and effective. He simply wants to announce it's available, and he has no concern with what happens after that. If it turns out it was unsafe and or ineffective, once it is administered to the U.S. population, he will simply revert to his prior claims and use it as evidence that he was right to say vaccines were dangerous. Trump's anti-science views are much of the reason that 81 Nobel laureates in various scientific fields have collectively endorsed Joe Biden. That from Justin. We thank him for that. We go to Jonathan, who says, I'm sorry, but your panel is incorrect. The Russian vaccine initial tests have shown good effectiveness. More testing is needed, of course, but so far it looks good.
Well, wait a sec, Joe. I mean, I would ask the letter writer how he knows that. I mean, I trust nothing that's coming out of Russia right now. It is constant propaganda. So I actually push back respectfully and say that no, we really can't depend on the Russians and the data that they're providing us.
Malcolm, you were going to say
having written three books on Trump and Russia. And knowing Russia from way back in the Cold War, nothing's changed. All right. I say this every show. I'm going to say it again. Russia is led by an ex-KGB officer who was a career communist right up to the day he became a career billionaire pro-fascist capitalist. No one knows anything that's coming out of Russia. They could literally have zombie hordes running around today, which, by the way, is the theme of the show.
Yeah.
And,
zombie show.
We would not know it until, of course, they took a flight to Florida to, you know. So don't believe anything that comes out of Russia. They have not changed since the fall of the Soviet Union in terms of the way their government lies.
All right, back to the letters. We go to Vicky, who says, I'm really angry that the Justice Department is defending Trump in this case. That was the Jean Carroll. I want to get to that after the break if I can, so I'm going to hold that letter.
Yes. Let's get to that.
Let's be honest about it, says Vincent. This vaccine has been pulled because of liability insurance, and plain speak, that's called cover your ass. And yes, the S's have dollar signs. We go to Rick, who says Congress will pass a law that determines that the drug companies will not be liable or can be sued for releasing a dangerous vaccine. Ray says, let's please recall that one of the major tenets of any ethical medical treatment is do no harm. Alan says, my understanding of vaccines is that they cure nothing. They prevent one from becoming ill with the disease due to antibodies being already present to fight off infection. Therapies and cures are a different animal altogether. Conflating plasma therapy and the ridiculous hydroxychloroquine fraud seems odd unless you are strictly comparing the administration's idiocy, which I think is exactly what we were doing, but unless anybody wants to go further on that. We go to Anne, who says, I was absolutely appalled at a subject of discussion yesterday on the panel, namely that Trump would be reelected by people who don't care either way because of the higher entertainment value. We did get a letter like that. I just caught a snippet on my way back to work, but the panel seemed to completely accept this as normal and didn't in any way comment on how sick and very upsetting this state of affairs is. I don't think that's true.
Well, I think it's both. No. Rosemary, you're the guilty one here. You want to talk about this a little bit?
Oh, I'm not guilty. I'm the honest one here, and we've talked about this multiple times. Trump has been, since 2015, he's brought in people who would not normally be involved at all in politics, and a big part of that is his reality TV entertainment value. Trump is a who. And he's fascinating to watch, sort of like a car accident. But that's the reality. I mean, today, look at what we're talking about today, a fake vaccine, possibly, and a Nobel Peace Prize nomination, which is really interesting, and his trick to get us to pay for his rape cases. And that is all to keep us from talking about how he called war veterans and fallen soldiers losers and bums. Come on. He is entertaining in the worst sense of the word.
Well, he's a political Mr. Magoo, if you really think about it. I mean, the sad part is that he shouldn't even have his finger on the remote, let alone the red button.
Malcolm.
And, you know, I will give you I try to maintain a relatively low level of outrage on this show because I have television to express my outrage in a much more forceful manner. But 192,000 Americans are dead because of this president. This thing, we could have had levels of death around North Korea, South Korea and China or Italy if they had done everything humanly possible from the beginning. This president for 6 weeks called it a hoax. And he said that they would have 15 deaths and it was all going to go away. And just this last month, he said it's just going to disappear. I've said it twice on this show. I will now say it a third time. At some point, we are going to find out that there is a Vonnegut-type conference document sitting around where their staff voted to decide to allow coronavirus to move to herd immunity. And, you know, if their virus, their vaccine didn't become effective, that means that they are just going to allow it to burn through the population until, of course, the population gets enough of the population gets it and builds immunity. Problem is, we don't know if they have immunity to this virus yet. So that's the outrage for everybody on this panel for the rest of the day.
Yay.
Good outrage.
You're welcome.
Aren't you a little jealous, Rosemary? Don't you want to have a little outrage yourself?
No, that was good. Great story.
Let's see. Okay, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. I do want to move on to other stories. Yes, I want to get to the Justice Department and that story as well. We welcome your... we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, and Malcolm Nance make up the panel this morning. The Justice Department on Tuesday intervened in the defamation lawsuit brought by a woman who says President Trump raped her years ago, moving the matter to federal court and signaling it wants to make the U.S. government, rather than Trump himself, the defendant in the case. In filings in federal court in Manhattan, the Justice Department asserted that Trump was, quote, acting within the scope of his office as president of the United States when he denied during interviews in 2019 that he had raped journalist E. Jean Carroll more than two decades ago in a New York City department store. Carroll sued Trump over that denial in November. The maneuver removes the case, at least for now, from state court in New York, where a judge last month had rejected Trump's bid for a delay and put Carroll's team back on course to seek a DNA sample and an under oath interview from the president. It also means that Justice Department lawyers will be essentially aiding Trump's defense, and taxpayers could be on the hook for any potential damages if the U.S. government is allowed to stand in for Trump. Winning damages against the government, though, would be more unlikely than in a suit against Trump, as the notion of sovereign immunity gives the government and its employees broad protection from lawsuits. A lot to unpack there. Rosemary, I know you want to go at this one, so go ahead.
Yeah, I listened to the music in the break, and it was like you were getting a massage, and I think that was on purpose to calm me down, to make me a little mellow. I just went ballistic when I saw this. It epitomizes what I've said about Trump, especially Trump and Barr all along. They are brilliant at going to the limits of the law and using it in their favor. In this case, he denied that he had raped this woman from the 1990s, but he did that while he was president. and working with the press, talking to the press, has been seen in other lawsuits as part of his official duties. So technically, on paper, it's a completely legitimate case. And so it will be treated that way, which has the effects of delaying and putting off any sort of action, real action on this case, which is, of course, exactly what he wants. So they have won. No matter how it comes out, if a judge says this is crazy and throws it out, which I think they should, that's fine. But he has already won. He has gotten a delay, and he's won a victory. I don't think her lawyers are as smart as his, to tell you the truth. And this is, we have seen him do this again and again. You think he's out of the ballpark, he's done, he's washed up, and he pulls a little maneuver like this. As for Barr, they're not even pretending anymore. They don't care. They're taking the knock that he's acting as the president's lawyer, and he's just running with it. He is not even trying to deny it anymore. We are in such trouble if they are back in the next 4 years.
Alan.
I have absolutely nothing to add to that except my extraordinary outrage when I first heard the story. You know, it is so sickening, and it leaves us in a spot which so many countries have experienced when they have despotic people running things. So from my point of view, I think Rosemary summed it up beautifully, but it is just awful. It is so depressing.
Malcolm.
Well, full disclosure here, I know E. Jean Carroll. I'm associated with her with a pro-democracy group, and I've heard some of her personal feelings about this. But I think that Trump may have made a critical mistake by using the Justice Department. I know Barr is supposed to speak today from Chicago, where he's going to take questions about that, and they think that they've done something slick by essentially kicking this can a year down the road by sending it back to the courts, taking it out of the hands of the state courts, which was about to ask for Trump for DNA samples. I mean, it was extraordinary. But now we get to talk about Trump raping a woman. And the allegations are serious, so serious that the Department of Justice has decided they need to intervene and stop this suit from moving forward in the states, which to a certain extent gives it a little credibility, much more than anything else that we've heard thus far. So if Trump's opponents are a little disgusted by this, well, just think of how disgusted Trump is going to be when he hears the R word spoken daily around Bill Barr's essentially trying to quash a rape allegation.
Bob Griffin.
When this first happened, Joe, and I share the panel's outrage, my initial reaction was by taking it to the federal courts, he's putting himself in a position where he could get a pardon. And I would have to go back and talk to legal scholars, and I'm sure this would be a situation that goes through the courts, but it may be something that, you know, I could foresee a scenario that if he loses the election, that Trump steps down in the final minutes of his administration and tries to get a pardon from Pence.
It's something that Michael Cohen has outlined in his book as well.
I did not know that, but thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I also find it fascinating, and I'm again pivoting a little bit, but if you think about what we spend tax dollars on, okay. We have a Senate that has said that they don't support SNAP, which is food for people who don't have food. Yet we're going to be spending our tax dollars to defend a billionaire on a rape charge from the 90s. I mean, that's your tax dollars at work. And if you're not outraged at that, then you really don't get outraged at anything.
Good point.
You know, the rape charge is so specific. We have read in papers like the New York Times and other places the exact way that this happened. It is so horrifying. It's so awful that any human being could put themselves on another person the way that the allegation is here that Trump did. It's just more than anybody should be able to stomach, a president of the United States. And it's and this is not a single case.
No, far from it. And Rosemary, I'm just struck by what you said of, you know, that this very slick but maybe better lawyering here and ultimately gets away with it.
Yeah, he's just gotten away with so much. And I listened to this and I read this and he could pull this off. It's not easy to win rape and sexual harassment charges, as every woman in this country already knows. And now he has not only the full weight of his own wealth, but the U.S. government weight behind him. It's just appalling. And I hope there's lots of really great pro bono lawyering work going her way.
And you know, Joe, it's hard to look at global news and look at Belarus and see what's happening there with the crackdown and how they use just the so-called Justice Department there to actually infringe on just the basic civil liberties of their people and not have the same comparison with the Barr Department of Justice and the Trump administration. We have. A crew in office that have turned our government into a banana republic.
Yep. Yeah.
Let's go to another other stories here that I want to have time for. So we've been talking a lot about another relief bill. So now we have one from Mitch McConnell that isn't expected to go anywhere. Because he's having trouble even getting support amongst the Republicans. It is he unveiled a slimmed down coronavirus relief bill. He announced plans to move to a vote later this week in an effort to put Democrats on the defensive after weeks of stalled talks. The legislation, though, is expected not to advance, since that would require support from Democrats, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called the measure pathetic. McConnell has struggled even to unite Republicans behind the measure, and it is likely to suffer GOP defections, which I believe it already has. But a month after bipartisan talks collapsed on Capitol Hill, McConnell is aiming to pressure Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer by presenting a GOP package that would spend around $500 billion on some key priorities, including small businesses, enhanced unemployment insurance, child care, the post office, coronavirus testing, and schools. It would create a type of liability shield as well for businesses to protect them for certain lawsuits related to the coronavirus. Alan.
Well, we knew that the last part from the very beginning. They want to protect their friends, corporations, and individual business owners, because those are the people who they consider to be their base. McConnell is obviously under some pressure. He has to show something. Look, he's got to defend a lot of Senate seats, and if he doesn't, the Senate is going to go Democratic. We pretty well know that. So he has to protect those who he needs to protect. And on the other hand, there will be a lot of people who in the Senate who go the other way, whose constituents don't want them to spend money and don't, you know, I mean, so objectified the poor and the black and the Hispanics by Trump, that, and these are the people who believe all of that. So I think Nancy Pelosi has it right. It's pathetic.
Rosemary?
Well, I have to say, this is a story that confuses me a little. I was waiting to hear what you guys would say. I think that the Senate Republicans have pulled a trick on the Democrats. Why won't they take something rather than nothing? Isn't this a lot like gun control, where the Democrats are saying, no, you have to give us exactly what we want. We won't take it piecemeal. And so the country ends up with zero. Isn't that exactly the same thing here? There's no relief for people who are out of jobs. There's no relief for schools. There's no extra money for PPE and for the other things that this bill would provide. Yes, it doesn't do what the Democrats wanted to, but at least it's something. So don't they look stingy? On the other hand, he has totally set a booby trap here, that if Nancy Pelosi falls for this, then he wins. And what does he get out of it? What do people in Kentucky who are voting for him for re-election, do they say, wow, isn't he great? He's really, really holding back and making sure the Democrats don't get more money in their states. Is that what's happening in Kentucky?
Well, he is running. I mean, McGrath is only running 2 to 3 points behind him right now, which is pretty amazing. So, yeah, I think he is hearing the footsteps behind him. You know, Joe, could I toss something for response from the panel too? I was thinking about the $300 a week, and they make it sound like there's some largesse to that. I think every senator and member of Congress should have to survive on $300 a week in order to see how little it actually gets you. And this is a problem, and I'll say it honestly, this is a problem with the powers that be in D.C. is that they are so disconnected from what it takes to run a family and live a life. And the example is right there in this bill. I mean, this is an anti-people bill.
Okay, so that's a little false, too, because they're not saying you have to live on $300. They're saying we're going to kick in $300 because we've got big money problems. So my question is, what are you spending that money on instead? If we can't afford it to give it to citizens who are facing the consequences of an unprecedented public health crisis, what are we spending the money on? The military? Those losers? I mean, really, that's the issue, is our priorities. This money deserves to go to the states and to the people who are suffering.
If you're surviving on the little bit that you're getting right now, which a lot of people are, then it's not semantics, it's life.
Malcolm.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think it's pretty clear that Mitch McConnell has reverted back to normal standard Republican Mitch McConnell, who, one, just does not care about people. He doesn't care about them. And further to that, he understands that the Trump base is so deranged and so cult-like, even though they themselves are the biggest group, right? Which is blue-collar, white men and women living in rural areas, that even though they're the ones who are suffering, they don't care because they believe in this cult-like, tribalistic way that they are hurting people of color, minorities, and immigrants. So when you have a group that is locked into this ideology of hurting the other, even though it actually hurts them, I think McConnell is reading the base very correctly, which is screw the Democrats, no more ground, give a little pittance out there so Trump can say that he saved the economy and saved his voters, and then just go back to being obstinate about money. Because as we've learned from this coronavirus, money is not about Americans. Money is about the richest corporations in the United States, and anything outside of that, they will not funnel money to.
So what do you think happens next? If this fails, as it is expected to do, do we do anything then, Alan?
Well, he's going to say, I tried. He's going to say, we tried. And in Rosemarian terms, he may win on that. He may trick everybody by saying, okay, you see, we tried to do it and we couldn't. Now, I think, the pittance that he's offering is obviously, as I said before, pathetic, but he's doing it in order to save some of his people. And it has no more to do with what's good for anybody than the standard politics of how do I get my senators elected? How do I save the most of them? By the way, I think the United States Senate is going Democratic. And I think, he's trying whatever he can, whatever trick he can, to hold that back.
Bob?
Yeah, Joe, if I could jump in, too. What also is not in this bill is that there is no support for state and local governments. And if you think about where our services actually really come from, most of the services we care mostly about are within our own communities. And
you bet.
Our communities are hurting, and there is no support there. So what's going to happen is McConnell's going to get up there, and he's going to blame the Democrats. Schumer's going to get up there. He's going to blame the Republicans. And the vast majority of the Americans are not going to pay attention because they're tired of the bickering.
All right. Let's go to some letters here. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes before we have to take a break, and we've got quite a few letters, so let me get to as many as we possibly can. Mary writes, our representatives in Washington are letting Americans suffer because they won't agree on giving folks $300 a week. Forget all the other caveats. Just approve the $300. What are they doing with the money? They're still spending billions on subsidies for the fossil fuel industry.
There's my question. Yes.
Then we go to Joy, who says, where has this woman been for 30 years? Where was she in 2016 when it might have helped? This is about E. Jean Carroll, I believe.
Her suit came out in 2016, before that.
Let's not blame the victim.
She was one of the 25 women.
Sean says, I thought pardons were only from criminal cases, not cases seeking damages. No, we've talked about that, right? You can... Bless you.
Bless you. I believe so, but again, I need to go back and do some more research, which I will.
We go to Erica, who says Biden or the Dems should invite all the women who have accused Trump of sexual assault to sit in the front row of the first debate. Trump and the Republicans did that to Hillary.
Please, let's not do that. It's old. We've done it.
Trump and the Republicans did that to Hillary. Women who accused Bill Clinton of sexual assault were placed in the front row of the Clinton-Trump debate. Giving them a taste of their own medicine might throw Trump off. This on William Barr. Jamie says, go ahead.
Sociopaths don't care. Trump doesn't care about 192,000 dead. He's not going to care about 25 women in the front row.
You got that right.
Exactly.
Chris says, is white supremacy the single greatest threat to our national security?
I would say domestically, I agree.
Bob?
Domestic what?
He said domestically, he agrees.
I think domestically, but I still think that there is a lot of issues with Russia and China and Iran that we can't ignore. I'll also remind everybody that this administration significantly cut back or stopped a lot of the work that we were doing on identifying and dealing with radicalization from domestic terror groups, including the ones on the far right.
Let's go to, Jamie says, I consider the actions of William Barr to be the most serious of all the problems that Trumpism has brought to this country. While Trump is insane, William Barr's actions are made from what he considers rational. To ensure the American people are never betrayed again, he should be criminally prosecuted after this madman is out of office.
I have only two things to say about that, two words. John Mitchell. Richard Nixon's attorney general. He was prosecuted, convicted, and sent to prison for his part in that.
In Watergate.
We go to Chris. No, I'm sorry. It is actually Beth who says, have any of you wondered why we aren't hearing anything about strengthening our own immune system to be less susceptible to the virus? It isn't a cure, but prevention is important, and there are a lot of things we can do on our own and don't involve big pharma. That from Beth.
I actually think there has been conversation about that. And again, I'll go back to even something as simple as wearing a mask and washing your hands and being, social distance. And if you're found to be positive, don't go out to parties. So there's a lot of simple things that we could do. And I think as we do more research into COVID, we are going to find more ways that we can strengthen ourselves. But right now, it's still relatively early in research.
The problem with letters like this is that it equates what we can do individually and in small increments to what government does. It's like saying to stop global warming by not flying as much, reduce your global footprint. That has nothing. It does not compare at all with stopping pollution by fossil fuel burning industry. They're completely different things, and discussing them together is a distortion. Like, we actually have more say and more power than we do. A pandemic of this proportion requires coordinated global action at the governmental level.
Anybody on that?
One last thing before I head out.
Yeah, Malcolm has to go at 10:30.
Your immune system is great for something it's been introduced to before, in which it's developed antibodies to. The coronavirus, I said this joke once before, I'm going to say it again. It's literally like something that dropped in from Mars. We have never seen it. It is novel. Yes, it is a coronavirus, but we don't know if there are any built-in immunities to it. And right now, based on the number of dead and infections around the world, and there have been incidents of reinfection. So you cannot rely on that until a vaccine that allows us to use our own immune system to fight this is developed. The things you can do are not part of your immune system. It is a protective measure to stop the virus from getting inside your body. Masks, hand washing, social distancing. But once you've got it, it will determine what happens to you.
All right. I have to cut you off, unfortunately, because we have to go to a break. But I thank you for being here. And thanks, as always, for playing along. The rest of the crew will be back right after this news break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. The last go around with our panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo still with us. And we go to other stories here as we wrap up in the last few minutes here. I was interested in the story. I don't know whether people think it doesn't matter or not. I find it interesting about the White House lawn. This is a report from the Washington Post that you will remember, of course, that much of the GOP convention took place in either the Rose Garden or in the White House lawn. Well, now there is a great deal of work that has to be done because there was so much damage done caused by those events. President Trump's reelection campaign is paying to replace sod on the White House South Lawn and in the Rose Garden after damage to the greenery late last month from large crowds and heavy equipment used for the Republican National Convention. That, according to White House and campaign officials. Trump's unprecedented decision to stage overtly political events on public property, which drew complaints that the Trumps were using the People's House for personal gain, continues to reverberate nearly 2 weeks later as work crews re-sod the lawn and make other repairs. On August 27th, the president delivered his address formally accepting the Republican nomination on the South Lawn before an estimated crowd of 1,500 supporters seated on chairs. The president spoke from an enormous stage built in front of the South Portico of the White House. It was flanked by massive television screens and illuminated by scores of hulking spotlights, all particularly heavy equipment to position on grass. Two nights earlier, First Lady Melania Trump delivered her convention address in the newly reconstructed Rose Garden with dozens of supporters seated in chairs. Turf was laid atop the grass as a protective measure, according to one White House official who spoke on the condition of anonymity, because why not? The sod is being replaced at no cost to taxpayers, according to the White House spokesman Judd Deer. Additionally, there has been other planned infrastructure work taking place on the South grounds. Bob?
On other days, this would have been a huge issue, but because of the Eugene Carroll situation, yeah. and I'm sorry, it's got lost. It really bothers me in a couple of different levels, and it's too easy to poo-poo it and say, well, you know, the campaign paying for the damage, but there's a couple things I want everybody to think about. One is that the damage should never have occurred anyway. All right, the White House should never have been used in such a way. And in fact, I would urge that we change the law to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
The law is that it should not have happened. It's called the Hyde Amendment, and it was violated without regard, without anybody prosecuting.
and it needs to be strengthened. This does affect national security because they can't fly in. The Secret Service and the military can't fly the president from Andrews to the White House. That means that they have to take a motorcade. And anybody who's been in D.C. knows that traffic is horrible. There's a lot of additional costs that come along with this that we don't associate with, including the fact that it could have an impact on our national security. So there's a lot to play here.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I think it's a baloney story, to tell you the truth, framed incorrectly. The violation here was that he used the White House for a political event, and the Justice Department should be handling this instead of going after his old rape cases. To say that the lawn is ripped up and needs to be replaced, it gets ripped up all the time. Every time they have an egg roll on Easter, it gets ripped up and they fix it. That, I don't see that as the big deal. I see the big deal as violating the law with disregard by justice, and other people should be paying attention for it. Use of those symbols that are American, not Republican, in ways that are incorrect. And the health violation, because the damage was caused by chairs. Thousands of chairs being put close together and sat in by people who didn't wear masks. Those are the real violations here, not that the lawn is damaged.
And Alan.
Oh, brother. You know, I think you all have it right. This is really not the point about a guy who's being accused of rape, who has basically raped the country, whose malevolence is so well known. There are a lot of things you could do. I was interested yesterday when Trump was talking about his postmaster general should be that if he'd done anything wrong, he should be punished. I thought that was an extraordinary kind of thing for him to be saying, and I think, there must be more to this than we know if he's going that far.
Great point.
Interesting, Alan. Yeah, because when he starts separating himself from his people, it's usually because he knows something's coming. I mean, remember what he did with both Stone and Flynn.
Yeah.
All right, we are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us this morning, and we are leaving just a touch early because Alan has an amazing interview with Arlo Guthrie talking about the Guthrie Center that we're going to play next coming up. So stay tuned for that. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
And also Bob and Rosemary, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks.
We'll be back right after this short break.